श्री चैतन्य मनोविष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं।
हरे कृष्णा, वेलकम बैक टू अवर भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स, कंटिन्यूइंग विद द नेक्टर ऑफ डिवोशन। सो वी डिस्कसिंग द 64 आइटम्स ऑफ डिवोशनल सर्विस एंड वी डिस्कस हाउ देयर आर आइटम्स व्हिच आर प्रवृत्ति, थिंग्स टू बी डन, एंड एज निवृत्ति, थिंग्स टू बी अवॉइडेड। So today what we will be discussing, we will discuss two chapters today. In the first chapter, we will discuss about the items to be avoided. So Srila Prabhupada devotes a full chapter to the item of avoiding offenses in devotional service. And this itself comprises a major subject. So the word aparad has in its root etymologically, if you go Radha is related to Radha. So aparad is that which takes us away from Radha. Radharani is the Ladini potency of Krishna. She is the pleasure giving potency, Ladini Shakti. And when we go away from the Ladini Shakti, then we do not experience any pleasure in devotional service. So the results of offenses can be manifold. One result is that when we go away from the Ladini Shakti, when we don't experience any taste in bhakti, then because of that lack of taste, we all need happiness. So when we don't get happiness in spiritual life, we cannot go on very long. Then the material taste start popping up. And when material taste prop up, then we get attracted to those material taste and eventually we may fall away. So actually, among offenses, which is aparad, and sins, which is papa, from the bhakti point of view, aparad is more dangerous than papa. Because when we do aparad, then we go away from Krishna and we lose the taste in devotional service. So aparad, generally pap and punya, they are material. They act at the material level. Of course, it is not that we can do pap and nothing matters. Pap also brings its consequences, the sinful reactions that come up. And pap takes us towards rajoguna, tamoguna, which is pratikul for bhakti. So pap is also harmful, but even more is aparad. Because aparad is directly anti-devotional. And that's why one has to be very careful about offenses. So, what do we mean by an offense? Offense means that we basically disrespect that which is to be respected. And that disrespect arises because we mistake that which is spiritual to be material, that which is divine to be mundane. And of course, it is not that Krishna is waiting to find fault. So you committed this offense, now go, I'll make you fall down. Nothing like that. Generally speaking, we should always have a positive attitude, that rather than looking at offenses as some things to be feared and to be paranoid about, we look at it as positively, that you know that these are guidelines of things which I will do if I am disrespectful. So in contrast, if I cultivate a respectful attitude, then I will no longer commit those offenses, and instead I will be able to deepen and strengthen my relationship with Krishna. So if we look at the offenses, the primary focus in them is that we treat Krishna respectfully, treat Krishna's manifestations respectfully. So for example, when we go in front of the deity, so one of the offenses, I won't read through the whole list of offenses, you can read through it, it is quite straightforward, but I'll just discuss some principles. When we go in front of the deity, it is said that one should not shout and chastise somebody in front of the deity. So that is natural. It is just a way of showing respect to the deity. If say two children are having a quarrel, then they may quarrel. If their father or their grandfather comes over there, then you know, they will stop their mischievous behavior and they will be a little bit more sober. That is the way we show respect to our elders. So the Supreme Lord is the supreme being. He is the king of all kings. So when we come in his presence, then we should be at our best behavior. So that is the basic principle. The idea in deity worship is twofold, that there are two moods. One is that if the deity is at home, then we treat the deity as the king, as the owner of the house. And when the deity is in the temple, we treat the deity like a king. You know, a king whom we have invited to reside with us. So that's why in the temple, the deity is also offered opulence as much as possible. So opulent jewelry, opulent dresses, and then often there are huge temples, all that is, the Lord is the king and he's being welcomed over there. Now, again, if we understand this basic principle of being respectful, so that we are remembering Krishna, all these items, their common denominator is Smartavya Satatam Vishnu Smartavya Jatucha, always remember Krishna. So if we are remembering Krishna, then automatically we will avoid these offenses. So at one time it happened that when one devotee was cleaning the room of Srila Prabhupada, at that time the devotee, there was at one place in the room photo of Prabhupada, and he just put the photo of Prabhupada upside down. Hung it on the, it was supposed to be hung on the wall, and there it was kept, not on the, hung on a wall, it was kept on a sill, and there he hung it upside down. Prabhupada came and said, this is offensive. No, Prabhupada, it was not that Prabhupada was concerned about his own, how he is respected. But the idea that when we respect the representative of Krishna, that is the way we are expressing our Krishna consciousness, and that's what Krishna sees, and he wants to give us his mercy. If you're not being Krishna conscious, then why will Krishna increase our Krishna consciousness? So if we are actually seeing if we are handling the picture of our spiritual master, then naturally it is basic sensitivity that, okay, I'll keep this picture. How can I keep a picture upside down? So it's natural. So Srila Prabhupada considered that of offense. Normally, even when we are carrying books, if we are carrying books for distribution also, you know, if the books have pictures of Krishna, it is as much as possible you should keep the book with the picture vertically up, not vertically down. That may not always be practical if we are carrying hundreds of books or something like that. But if you are traveling, if you are carrying a Bhagavad Gita, then it is good to keep the Bhagavad Gita with Krishna's picture vertically, not upside down. So it's basic principle in avoiding offenses is just be conscious and be respectful. And if we are that way, then we will naturally be able to avoid most of the offenses. Now, some of the offenses may seem to be a little mutually contradictory. For example, it is said, one statement is that when one sees one spiritual master, one should not fail to offer respect to the spiritual master. So it's that one should offer obeisances, and I'll offer obeisances, one should also chant the pranam mantra loudly, not so loudly that we disturb others, but basically it should not just be in the mind. That's also a way of, just like we chant aloud the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, similarly aloud we chant the mantra. So that's one principle, that we should not fail to offer praise to the spiritual master when we see him. The other principle is that when we are in front of the deities, we should not offer praise to anyone else. So now what happens if we see the spiritual master in the temple hall? Now, do we offer praise to the deity? Do we follow the second principle and not offer praise to the spiritual master? Or do we follow the first principle and offer praise to the spiritual master? So actually, Krishna is bhavagrahi. Krishna will see our attitude. You know, we can see that, okay, the Krishna is present over here. Okay, let me not glorify anyone over here. So therefore, we may not glorify over there. That's okay. And that is okay if we do. Another way could be that, you know, actually we see the spiritual master as the representative of Krishna. Krishna's very dear servant. And then we glorify the spiritual master as the representative of Krishna. In fact, that is what we do in Mangal Arati. The Mangal Arati, actually it is Krishna who is coming and giving darshan. But what we are doing is samsara dhaman lidloka. We are actually glorifying the spiritual master. So we wonder, is this the way to welcome Krishna, that we glorify somebody else? But it's not somebody else. It's somebody who is dear to Krishna. And what are we glorifying the spiritual master for? All the verses of the samsara dhamanal prayers, they are prayers about how the spiritual master is so dedicatedly and gloriously serving Krishna. So basically we are glorifying Bhakti Devi. You know, Krishna, for him Radharani is very dear, and for the spiritual master also, spiritual master is also great bhakta. So when we are glorifying the spiritual master, we are basically glorifying the bhakti of the spiritual master, and thereby what we are glorifying is bhakti, and bhakti, glorification of bhakti is very pleasing to Krishna, and in that the glorification of Krishna is included, because Krishna is the object of bhakti. So some other principles, for example, say the other principles are very simple to understand. When we are on a clean stage, we should not go in front of the deities. So one principle is that if somebody has died in the family, then one should not go in front of the deities. So what is the logic of this? The idea is that there are two vidhis. We have discussed this. There is some people may say that actually when somebody has died, that is the time when we need consolation, that is the time when we need relief, and that's the time we should go to the temple. So what's the idea that one should not go to the temple? The primary idea is that when we are going to Krishna, especially when we are going to the deity manifestation to serve Krishna, this is largely primarily applies to those who are going to directly worship Krishna as the deity, as the deity's pujaris. So when we are going to serve Krishna, we should be fully available and attentive to serve Krishna. And just as there can be physical contaminations if we are unclean, similarly there can be emotional contaminations when we are distracted by grief. So if we are distracted by grief, we cannot offer the proper service to Krishna, and that's why especially one should not do the pujari service. And regarding going to the temple, it may depend. Srila Prabhupada was not very insistent about this, because in the traditional society, almost the whole society had a lot of spiritual culture, and people could get solace elsewhere. So if that is not happening, then if one needs solace and guidance, one can go to the temple, and one may just not go to temple hall. One can ask the specific temple devotees about what should one do if such a thing happens. But what is the principle? That we can do bhakti in two ways. One is Pancharatra Vidhi, and the other is the Bhagavat Vidhi. The Bhagavat Vidhi is centered on hearing and chanting, and Pancharatra Vidhi is centered on deity worship. So for Pancharatra Vidhi, there are a lot of rules and regulations about how one something is to be done, how something is not to be done, and one has to be careful about those rules. But with respect to Bhagavat Vidhi, there are practically no rules and regulations. And we see that when Chitraketu's son Harshashok passed away, what happened? The sages came over there, Parvati and Narad Muni, and they offered solace. How did they offer solace? By speaking philosophy. Similarly, when Srivast Thakur's son passed away, the devotees continued Harinam Sankirtan. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, later when he came to know, he was very touched by Srivast Thakur's sacrifice, being spirit, that even after his son died, he allowed the Harinam Sankirtan to go on. So that happened in his own home only. So the idea is that Krishna's shelter is always available. That shelter is available, maybe not through the Pancharatra Vidhi, it is available through the Bhagavat Vidhi. The Bhagavat Vidhi is focused on hearing and chanting. So that way, the principles that are there for avoiding offenses, the principles are meant so that we are more conscious of Krishna and we are able to offer proper service to Him. Now, as I said, the Pancharatra Vidhi is involving much more stricter rules than in Bhagavat Vidhi. So when there is Bhagavat Vidhi, it's hearing and chanting, so there are very less offenses in it. But even then, even in the chanting of the holy name also, there are offenses. And Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that there are actually two cautions one has to take. It is said that if we commit any offenses while worshipping the deity, if we chant attentively and pray to Krishna for forgiveness, then Krishna can forgive the offenses that were committed while serving, that worshipping the deity. So the holy name is far more merciful than the deity. There's many ways in which the holy name is merciful. First of all, general deity worship, it's only done by Brahman initiated devotees. Second, and deity worship, one has to go to the temple to worship the deity. The holy name, anyone can chant it, even a person who is not initiated, and a person who is breaking the regulations can chant it. And the holy name is like a portable form of Krishna. Deity is not portable. You know, in the early days of the movement, when Prabhupada got first time the deity Jagannath Baldev Subhadra, they installed it. And then in the evening, Srila Prabhupada came for the temple to take darshan, and there were no deities in the temple only. Prabhupada was shocked, what happened? He said, Prabhupada, the devotees had to take the deities to the garden, to the park. You know, there sometimes devotees in the park, they would do Harinam Sankirtan, they had to take the deities to the park. And Prabhupada rushed, and there, practically in the grass only, they had devotees that played the deities of Jagannath Baldev Subhadra, and they were doing kirtan. So Prabhupada did not speak anything over there. Prabhupada also joined the kirtans. And then, after that, then when the deities were brought back, then afterwards Prabhupada told that once the deities are installed at a particular place, they should not be moved. Like only on very special occasions, like there are Rath Yatras or Yatras, then the deities are moved. And even when those deities are moved, that is also generally it is the Utsamurti that are moved. The big deities are normally not moved. The smaller deities, which are moved in processions. Of course, sometimes the big deities are also moved, like it happens in Jagannath Rath Yatra. And there are Rath Yatras like that. There are Yatras like that for other temples also. But they are very special occasions. So, normally the deity is not portable. The holy name is portable. You can take the holy name anywhere and everywhere. So, holy name is much more merciful. But just because the holy name is merciful, that doesn't mean that we should be merciless in deity worship. That means that it's not that we be careless in deity worship and think that I can do any offenses and it's I just chanting will overcome the offenses. No, if we are actually chanting attentively, then we will be becoming Krishna conscious, and then we will naturally be Krishna conscious while worshipping the deity also, and then we will be properly reverential while worshipping the deity. So that's one aspect. The mercifulness of the deity worship of Your Holy Name should not be used as a license to become lax in deity worship. And secondly, if one should not be lax in chanting of the holy names also. Prabhupada writes that offenses to the deity can be removed by chanting the holy names. But what happens if we commit offenses to the holy name? Actually, then it is quite a serious thing. And we will have to work to remove them. So our spiritual progress can become very slow if you are offensive. And that's why Srila Prabhupada in the temples would have this regularly, the reciting of the 10 offenses against the holy name. And all these offenses are important. And if we look at the principles of devotional service, 64 items, we'll see that they will involve doing activities in a positive sense, which will naturally counter the offenses. So one cannot commit sinful activities because one is practicing devotional service. To commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name is quite a serious offense, because one completely misunderstands the purpose. Actually, the chanting of the holy names is an indication of, is an expression of Krishna's mercy. There are verses like, say, Namnu hi yavate shakti papam nirharanam hari yavat kartum na shaktoti patakam pataki naraha, that the holy name can remove more sins than what even the most sinful person can commit. So if somebody says, okay, then I can commit sins, what is the problem, and I'll chant Hare Krishna and the sins will be counted. But this is a wrong attitude. See, the idea is that Krishna, the promises in the scriptures, sometimes devotees ask this, it is said that if I do this, then this will happen, this will happen. You know, if he just takes once darshan of Jagannath, then one will be liberated. One do once, this will happen, that will happen. So are these promises exaggerations or are they real? Actually, they are real. But they are real when, but the mood we have to understand in that. These promises in the scriptures are expressions of Krishna's merciful heart, His immense compassion. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yetha Maam Prapadyante, that as all people surrender to me, I reward accordingly. So actually, when we are approaching Krishna's heart, we have to approach with our heart. So Krishna's our repentant heart, our humble heart, our repentant means we regret what we have done wrong and we want to reform. So our repentant heart attracts Krishna's compassionate heart. If we go with our calculative head, okay, I will do this sin, but then I will chant the holy name and I will counter the sin. And if you are going with a calculative head, then Krishna will also reciprocate the calculative head. You've done so many sins, then you have to bear the consequences. So the point is, if you look at the mood of the scriptural promises, it is, for example, at the end of the Ajamil pastime, it is Shukadeva Goswami says this, and Chakravarti Pada and Srila Prabhupada also say the same thing, similar things. The idea is by once chanting, and even unconsciously, Ajamil was relieved of immense sinful reaction. So then Shukadeva Goswami says, therefore, if one practices devotional service regularly, then won't the Lord be merciful and one be freed from sinful reactions? And then Prabhupada says, if we chant 16 rounds attentively, then surely we can be confident that the Lord will be that we will be delivered from sinful reaction. So the mood is that there are scriptural statements and scriptural promises, and they indicate the extent of Krishna's compassion. But a devotee is humble. A devotee doesn't demand that this should happen to me. And a devotee sees these extraordinary promises. The devotee takes those extraordinary promises as inspirations for intensifying one's commitment to the standard process of devotional service. So when we do the process of devotional standard, that means, yes, for Ajamil, chanting one name had such a miraculous effect. So what we should say? We shouldn't think that, okay, I'll do sinful activities throughout my life, and then at the end of my life, I'll chant one name. But that attitude is wrong. Because our goal is not just to somehow slip into the spiritual world. That is not the goal. even if we can slip into the spiritual world somehow, that is not, we will not be happy there if we haven't developed love for Krishna. Because everybody there will be centered in Krishna, and everybody will be talking about Krishna, thinking about Krishna, serving Krishna. And if we haven't developed that attitude, we won't be happy in the spiritual world also. So, we have to develop love for Krishna. And when we hear these extraordinary promises, they indicate the extent of Krishna's compassion, and they indicate the extent of Krishna's eagerness that we come back to Him. And to go back to Him, we have to develop our love for Krishna. And we develop our love for Krishna by committing to the standard process of devotional service. So that's how a devotee sees these promises, that as inspirations to increase our commitment and our intensity in the standard process of devotional service. And that way we can avoid using the holy name as a rationalization for committing sinful activities. So when we give up these offenses, then we can make very swift spiritual advancement. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that if one can just avoid offenses and chant, then one can attain the supreme perfection of life. So, this is the with respect to the offenses. So, Prabhupada gives many lot of offenses list, and then let's move forward and we'll discuss the next chapter now. Next chapter talks about further considerations of devotional principles. So, the first principle is about blasphemy. So, Prabhupada gives one reference, and then he says that there are three ways of dealing. One is, if someone is heard blaspheming by words, one should be so expert that he can defeat the opposing party by arguments. If he is unable to defeat the opposing party, the next place is, he should not just stand up meekly there, but give up life. Third process is that if one is unable to defeat, then one should leave the place and go away. So what does this mean? So we see especially with respect to offenses, in the sixth, in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Daksha offends Lord Shiva by not having any place for him, not allocating for him any share in the yajna sacrifices and sacrificial offerings, then Daksha's daughter, who is also Shiva's wife, Sati, she sees this and she feels that her husband has been offended, and she gives up her life. And similarly, we see that in the Rajasuya Yajna, when Shishupal started blaspheming Krishna, there are many kings who walked away from there. Some kings, if it's not possible to walk away, one can plug one's ears and one doesn't hear it. So then beyond that, of course, the best way is that one answers the questions. Now here one also has to be careful. If somebody asks some doubt, some questions, we also have to see the attitude when he's talking about blasphemy. We shouldn't label any. If somebody just has an inquiry, if somebody asks, maybe there has been this problem, that problem in ISKCON, we shouldn't say, hey, you are blaspheming. No, if a person maybe have a sincere inquiry. So at that time, one should not just simplistically label any criticism as blasphemy. Because sometimes there is a valid criticism, and behind that criticism, there may be a motive of wanting to clarify things. So then one should be able to clarify. So that's why in general, the second is not an option which devotees should ever adopt. The first or the third, we move away from that situation. We don't hear it. Our first is that we hear and clarify. We hear what a person is saying and then offer the proper understanding so that the person gets clarified. So especially nowadays, we can become very susceptible to hearing blasphemy, because on the internet, anyone can put anything about anyone. And then that just spreads over a wide place. And how much is the true element, how much is the false element, it's very difficult to know in that. So that's why we have to be careful. In general, we don't have to go around searching for gossip on the internet. If somehow but what happens if you don't go searching, sometimes people send mass emails, this has happened here, that has happened here, that has happened here. So what we should understand is, Prabhupada's movement is a very big movement, and there are people who come from different backgrounds, and there can be different situations in which problems can come up. And what I know is that I am following the process of bhakti, and to the extent I have followed the process, to that extent it has benefited me. And if I keep following, it will benefit me. I can see there are senior devotees who have been following this process, and to the extent they have followed, they are making spiritual advancement. So if somewhere somebody did something wrong and that created problems, that is a problem with the individual, and it's not a problem with the process. And sometimes there may not be a problem with the individual also. Sometimes there may be no offense at all, there may be nothing wrong, and as the what is being portrayed is just a lie, or it's a distorted truth which perverts the picture completely. So therefore, we have to be cautious, and if somehow such mails come, then we can ask some senior devotees and get clarification about the issues. So that's with respect to blasphemy. And generally, when we are if we have to clarify and counter issues, that also we should not do it in a violent way. We see that when Lordship, before this, so actually the Daksha pastime is quite elaborate. First time Lord Shiva is there, and Daksha blasphemes Lord Shiva, and then some of the followers of Daksha try to counter, and then the Brahmanas who are doing the sacrifice, they counter, and it just becomes a whole cursing, counter cursing, it happens over there. That's the first time. And second time is Lord Shiva is not there only, Sati is there, and then she commits suicide. So she gives up her body. So in the first case, there also the cursing and counter cursing, now that leads to unnecessarily catastrophic results. So in general, when we hear something that seems like a blasphemy, it's not that we have to be just sitting to take offense, hit back rather. We have to respond in a way, while following these three principles also, we have to respond in a way that doesn't make a bad situation worse. So for the followers of Lord Shiva to hear the blasphemy against Lord Shiva, that was certainly, they can't hear Guru Aparad passively. But then how do they respond to it? They have to respond maturely, not in a way that makes the things worse. So the idea here is not that we use this principle as a license to create conflict or to provoke aggravate conflict. The idea is that we should have a respectful attitude towards the Krishna, towards the spiritual master, and we should help others to have that respectful attitude. And if some people are too envious to have that respectful attitude, then better go away from those people. And if there are some people who are innocent who may be misled, then we clarify and counter those things. But we do it in a proper attitude so that we make things better, not worse. Let's move to the next one. And after that, Prabhupada talks about tilak and tulsi beads. So how one should wear this, and what is the glory of wearing this? There are a set of references there. And then there are accepting flower garlands. So here, actually, and when we talk about flower garlands, here there is this item, scented oils. So now, in the early edition of Nectar of Devotion, this had been written as saintly articles. So sainted oils and saintly articles. Now what does saintly articles refer to? It is quite confusing for people. So actually, if you know how Srila Prabhupada's books were written and published, Prabhupada would speak, and then there would be the dictaphone would be transcribed by devotees, and then it would go to the editors would edit it, and finally it would get published. So in the early days of the movement, the devotees were not familiar with Sanskrit terms, and they were not familiar with Srila Prabhupada's pronunciation also. So sometimes they would not understand the words properly. So sainted oils and saintly articles, somehow the devotees misunderstood it, and that's how it was put like that over the saintly articles. So this sort of things have been edited, and there are some devotees who make a big hue and cry, oh, Prabhupada's books have been changed by some people, by the editors, and they say that, oh, we should read original unedited books of Srila Prabhupada. But actually Srila Prabhupada himself wanted his books to be edited, and the editors like Jayadvait Maharaj and others, they have actually meticulously noted down what they have done. They have made a booklet called Responsible Publishing, in which he has described what all were the catalogue of kind of errors that were there and what were corrected. So Srila Prabhupada himself said, one mistake it kills the book. He said, people lose credibility, there is some mistake in the book. So Prabhupada wanted the books to be flawless, and what the devotees did was, the editing was primarily grammatical editing, and if something had been, if what Srila Prabhupada had spoken had not come in the book, then that was changed. And there was one place where the devotees had translated, Prabhupada had a Pitraloka, And the devotees had no idea of Pitriloka, what Pitriloka is. So they had written Triloka. Now, it was actually published in the book Triloka. Now, you know, if we publish a book with something called Triloka, we'll become a laughing stock among people who know seriously what has been talked about. So now, if we today publish a book with Triloka, it'll be ridiculous. It'll be actually, we will be offending our spiritual master by doing something like this. So that doing that editing is vitally responsible, is essential. You know, in the when the devotees were earlier they were doing editing. So at one time, when Srila Prabhupada was doing transcription, Srila Prabhupada has spoken some word that was not there in the dictionary only. So there's no word like that, and Prabhupada had spoken it. And the devotees could get a general sense of the word by the context. But then they thought, you know, if a pure devotee has used this word, then rather than changing the word, we should change the dictionary and have the word included in the dictionary. That's what they thought. And but one of the other editors said, better we clarify with Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada, when they asked him, Prabhupada said that, no, change the word. What is the word? You change it and make, use it properly so that it will be proper. So Prabhupada wanted the books to be first class. So the sentiment is good that, you know, yes, whatever is being done, we should, whatever pure devotee is perfect, but that is in principle. Now, Srila Prabhupada was asked at one time, okay, is a pure devotee perfect? So Prabhupada said, yes, Jayadvait Maharaj, Satsurup Maharaj, many of these went there for morning walk. And when Jayadvait Maharaj is Prabhu at that time, he asked Prabhupada, but when we see the spiritual master makes mistakes? So Prabhupada said, the spiritual master doesn't make any mistakes, but we see that. Sometimes he quotes the verses wrong. The Prabhupada would often quote the verse, Janma Karma Chame Devyam, Evam Yoti Tekta Tekta Deham Punajam Niti Maameti Swarjuna. So Prabhupada often quoted the Naiti Maameti so Pandava. So now we said, what if we actually see the spiritual master quoting verses wrong? Prabhupada said, that is material vision. And the devotees are a little confused. What does it mean, that material vision? Then Satsurupa Maharaj said in their conversation that means, Prabhupada, we have a wrong conception of perfection. Prabhupada said, yes. The perfection of a pure devotee is that the devotee's desires are perfect. The devotee always desires to serve Krishna. The devotee doesn't, there are no errors in the desires or intentions of a devotee. Sometimes we have our enjoyment-ality takes over so much that we engage, our desires are incorrect and improper. But so the perfection of a devotee is that the devotee, because the devotee always intends to serve and glorify Krishna, Krishna is pleased by that service, always. So even if a devotee pronounces the verse wrong, and a devotee, Krishna will be more pleased by that wrong pronunciation than will be somebody else who pronounces the whole verse with precise grammar, precise meter and precise pronunciation and still has no devotion. But at the same time, when we are publishing in a public forum, things have to be done accurately. That's what Srila Prabhupada wanted. So these kind of editing changes are there in Prabhupada's books, and there's no need to make any hue and cry about it. It's not that devotees want to change Prabhupada's message to change to something else. No, the devotees have given their life to Srila Prabhupada. What will they change? And what will the change achieve, basically? You know, are they going to say that, oh, you should not surrender to Krishna, surrender to Shiva, or surrender to somebody else, or surrender to me? Is anybody going to say like that? No. So the changes are done to bring the books to better quality, not with any ulterior motive at all. So it's a unnecessary controversy that has been created, and there's no need for devotees to get caught up in such things. Now going forward, let's move. So and then there are many items. Actually, most of the items that Prabhupada talks about here are all centered on the deity worship. So dancing before the deity, bowing down in honor of the deity, standing up to receive the Lord. So these are all items, and then there are references for giving. Following the deity. So going to a temple or places of pilgrimage. We'll discuss about pilgrimage places in the five potent forms of devotional service. And circumambulating the deity. So these are all. Now, archana itself, we may see that all this includes archana. All this is following the deity, going to temple, bowing down. Isn't it all archana? No, the way archana is, it specifically refers to doing aarti and deity worship in terms of doing puja and all other items can be, one can be taking darshan, one can be dancing, but archana means specifically doing deity worship. Then rendering service to the Lord. So Prabhupada quotes over here, this is the, I discussed earlier, the mood of any person who can arrange for service to the Lord in the same way that a king is given service by attendance is surely elevated to the abode of Krishna after death. So this is Vishnu Rahasya, this is the glorification of bhakti. Then there is singing. So one sings about the glories of the Lord. Now when he talks about Sankirtan, so now Srila Prabhupada used the word Sankirtan in a very broad sense. For example, he said even book distribution is Sankirtan. So one may not be specifically doing Kirtan. Of course, many times in book distribution, devotees do Kirtan also. But one is actually glorifying Krishna. So any form of glorification of Krishna is Sankirtan. In the final days of Prabhupada, when he was sick, in 1977, at that time, there was a science and religion conference which the Bhaktivedanta Institute organized. And Bhakti Swarupa Maharaj and Prabhupada were discussing about how to counter atheistic misconceptions. And at that time, after the, Prabhupada was getting quite rigorous in discussing how this should be countered. So, after the conversation went on for quite some time, then Tamal Krishna Maharaj came along and he said, Prabhupada, would you like to have Kirtan? He thought that Prabhupada is sick and Prabhupada will get quite exhausted. So Prabhupada got a little annoyed. Prabhupada said, do you think, what are we doing now? We are doing Kirtan only now. So Prabhupada considered that kind of speaking about, so any glory, any way in which we are sharing Krishna, that is Sankirtan. So Prabhupada gives a very broad definition of Sankirtan. And in that way, we can connect the various activities that we are doing for Sankirtan. So here, so in this particular section, actually, there is Kirtan, there are three references here. The first reference is about Naam Kirtan. The name of Krishna is so auspicious that anyone who chants his holy name immediately gets rid of the sinful actions. So this is Naam Sankirtan. And then there is, the next verse is about and because simply by hearing your pastimes, I shall get out of all the contamination of material attachment. This is Prahlad Maharaj in 7.9.18 saying that Anjasi Titaramyaham. He says, easily I will go over material existence. So the first was Naam Sankirtan, this is Leela Sankirtan. So here Prahlad Maharaj is not talking about chanting the names, he is talking about reciting the pastimes, hearing and reciting the pastimes. So then Prabhupada talks about how there are many songs which can be, many verses which you can recite, and how we, there's Brahma Samhita, there's Bhagavatam, there's so many places where there are verses. And then the last one, if we see, so there are various activities which are there, but if instead one goes to a holy place and chant the glories of the Lord, so this is also another reference for the Naam Sankirtan. So this is also another form of Sankirtan where one is chanting the glory. The glories can be the name or the pastimes, both. Now what is the difference between Sankirtan? Generally Sankirtan is in a group, Sankirtan, and it generally involves musical recitation or speaking aloud. Japa is an individual activity. So of course it is also recommended japa we do in a group with people, but the idea is that when we do japa, it is an individual meditation. It is an individual meditation. Individual meditation means that I am chanting and another devotee might be chanting, a third devotee might be chanting. So it's good if we chant together, because then if our mind starts wandering, if we fall asleep or something like that, the distractions will be less if we are in a group. Others will help us. But still, japa is individual meditation. That's the difference between japa and Sankirtan. It's best if you can do japa also in association. But the point is that japa is individual. And then, now after that we move on to another item called submission. Now this is interesting. There is submission, and then afterwards there is another item called reciting notable prayers. So reciting notable prayers and submission. So actually there's a difference between the two, and we'll look at each of them afterwards briefly. So submission it refers to offering one's own prayers, and reciting notable prayers refers to repeating scriptural prayers. Both are glorious. Actually, we have a praying is a very important way of developing our relationship with Krishna. And sometimes some devotees have some doubts. Should I pray to Krishna for something? You know, actually, kevala bhakti means we don't pray to Krishna for anything material. But sometimes when the devotees say, if I pray to Krishna for something and if that doesn't happen, maybe I'll lose my faith in Krishna. So maybe I shouldn't pray at all. No, the idea is, if we see the way the prayer is talked about, Prahlad Maharaj in the seventh canto, when he talks about the prayers, he says it is also one limb of bhakti. So shravanam kirtanam vishnu smaranam pada sevanam archanam vandanam dasyam sakhyam atmanivedanam. So vandanam, it's also one prayer. Now if we talk about vandanam, now what do we expect after shravanam kirtanam? Is it that after hearing, after chanting, after archanam, we expect some fruit? Or this should work out, that should work out. The fruit that we ever expect is that actually our relationship with Krishna will expand. So similarly, praying is a means. It is not so much to ask Krishna to do something for us. It is more of, that can be one aspect. But that is not the primary aspect. If we see the samsara, the avanal prayers, practically there is nothing being asked in those prayers. All the prayers are Vande Guru Shri Charana Aravindam. Similarly, if you look at the Brahma Samhita prayers, they are prayers, but there is nothing being asked. It's all the prayers are Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I simply worship the Lord. I worship the Lord. So the idea in of prayers is that we see prayers also as a means of developing our relationship with Krishna. So generally, if we talk with some person, that talking helps us develop the relationship with that person. And if we reveal our heart, as this Guhyam Akhyati Pruchyati, we discuss how that sharing our heart and hearing another devotee share a heart also, that all helps in developing. That's the way Preeti Lakshana, that's the way the love is developed between devotees. So what applies to the relationship between devotees also applies to the relationship between the devotee and the Lord. That so when we have something which is burdening our heart, then sharing that with the Lord is a way by which we go closer to the Lord, by which we expand, intensify, deepen our relationship with Krishna. And in this way, what happens is we feel closer to Krishna. So we can pray to Krishna and we don't have to bother about whether the prayer will be fulfilled or not. We can share our concern with Krishna. And often we can follow Srila Prabhupada's example. When he was sick in 67-68, at that time it seemed as if he had got a stroke and he was almost on the verge of departing from the world. So he told the devotees to pray that our spiritual master has not completed his work, please let him live. So Prabhupada offered that prayer there. And then later on again when he was sick, then he says, then Prabhupada would often, generally he would always pray, if you so desire, O Krishna, if you so desire, let our spiritual master live. So we can offer our, we can share our concern with Krishna, and then we can add, if you so desire. And my dear Lord, if it is your desire, this is what I feel should be done. But whatever happens, please allow me to continue serving you. Please allow me to render devotional service to you at all times. Now, so we can offer prayers from our heart in our own words. And that is also a very personal way in which you can develop a relationship with Krishna. So, all of us, we may have, you know, we all have different languages which from we come from. So our vernacular language, that is the language in which we grew up, and that is the language in which we deal with our relatives. So, there might be some intimacy and sweetness in that language. So, we have a standard process of devotional service in which we recite Sanskrit prayers or Bengali poems, and that is the standard way our acharyas are told. That is also a limb of devotional service. But at the same time, there may be a special intimacy that may come up if we speak those prayers in the vernacular language that we are familiar with. So that is also a limb. Submission here means offering prayers in our own words. And these prayers can be of three types. So Srila Prabhupada refers to these three prayers. Let's look at the submission. Prabhupada talks about Samprarthanatmika, Dainibodhika and Lalasamayi. So let's look at Samprarthanatmika prayers. Samprarthanatmika is, Prabhupada says, very feelingly offering prayers. What does it refer to? It refers to actually offering the prayers for spontaneous devotional service. So there's an example from Padma Purana over here. This is an example of Samprarthanatmika. Next example is of Dainivodhika. And then there is this Narada Panchatra example is of Lala Samai. So this is also Lala Samai. Let's look at these examples one by one. So the first example from Padma Purana. So Yuvati Nam Yatha, you know Chi Yuvati Nam Yatha, Mano Bhiramate Tatra, Mano Me Ramatam Tvai. So here the prayer is, my dear Lord, just as a boy is attracted to a girl and a girl is attracted to a boy, similarly, let my mind become attracted to you and let me delight in you similarly. So this is a prayer for spontaneous devotional service. Now, it's not that somebody has to educate a boy that you become attracted to a girl, or a girl you become attracted to, that's spontaneous. Now, of course, that spontaneity is a material level, and that spontaneity can often lead to immorality and perversity if it's not regulated. And that's why there is dharma and there is marriage and there are regulations like that. But this is an example which is given to indicate spontaneity. And that is why even in the scripture, sometimes when the gopi's attraction to Krishna is talked about, the word kama is used. Gopya kamad. It is such an intense attraction that actually it to give us an indication of how intense that attraction is. It is the same word is used as is used for the most intense attraction in this world. That is the attraction between the male and female. Because of kama. So that way, they say, this is a prayer, my dear Lord, please let me have spontaneous attraction for you. And then the next prayer is Dainabodhika. There is also one Padma Purana. Matulyo nasti papatma na pradhecha kashchana parihare pilajjame kimbruve purushottama. The prayer is Matulyo nasti papatma. My dear Lord, there is no one as sinful as me. Na pradhecha kashchana. So we discussed earlier sins and offenses. There are two categories of undesirable things. So this is the devotee is praying, my dear Lord, there is no one as sinful as me and no one as offensive as me. And how offensive am I if I try to tell this? Parihare pi lajjame. If I start speaking it, I feel ashamed of myself, my dear Lord. And I can't even speak sometimes. You know, we do such a terrible thing that we can't even speak what we have done. So the devotee is saying, that is my situation. Parihare pi lajjame. Kimbruve purushottama. My dear Lord, what can I speak? This is Daina Vodhika. So we see the Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayers also, Amara Jeevan Sada Paperat. This is Daina Vodhika. So of course, Daina Vodhika, this humility is not self-pity. It is not inferiority complex also. See, inferiority complex is false ego frustrated. Humility is false ego rejected. In inferiority complex, I want to be great, I want to be superior, I want to be famous, but I am not able to be famous. I don't have any qualities, I don't have any abilities, I don't have any successes, and that's why I start feeling I am worthless. And that is inferiority complex is undesirable. Devotee should not have inferiority complex. But humility means false ego rejected. It's not false ego frustrated. Devotee doesn't want to be self-centered. A devotee wants to be Krishna-centered. And Krishna, I am so worthless. I am so undeserving. And yet you have given me an opportunity to love you, to remember you. And I am so grateful to you, my dear Lord, for that. And I will grab this opportunity that you have given me. So we will see that Bhaktivinoda Thakur songs also, they may have very heart-wrenching expressions of one's fallen nature. But then the conclusion is, oh my dear Lord, I take shelter of you. You can deliver me. So the whole principle of humility is that we should not be self-centered, we should become Krishna-centered. So it's humility is false ego rejected. And similarly, humility is not self-pity. Self-pity means, oh, I am so bad, I am so this, I am so that. No. Humility is actually meant to just get us to be no longer self-conscious. There's nothing great about me. And you know, sometimes one devotee says, Prabhupada, I am the most fallen person in the whole world. Prabhupada said, you are the most nothing. And to think that I am most, that itself is a sign of false ego. You know, we shouldn't think that I am, whatever we are, we shouldn't think that I am so fallen that Krishna can't elevate me. Sometimes if you feel like that, that is also a form of false ego only. To think that I am so fallen that Krishna cannot elevate me. It's like saying, that my depravity, my fallen state is greater than Krishna's potency, which is actually false, which is a mistake, and it is false, and it is an expression of false ego. So we should not have such a thing. Nobody can be so fallen that Krishna cannot elevate such a person. And then there is lalsamai. Lalsamai is even more specific. Samprarthanatmika is focused on aspiration for spontaneous devotional service, where lalsamai is even more specific. It's a very advanced stage, and one is actually asking for swarupa siddhi. My dear Lord, let me be situated in my swarupa, and in my swarupa, let me serve you eternally. That is swarupa siddhi. Then after that, there is reciting notable prayers. So it's very good if we can remember verses from scriptures and recite those verses. And then there are verses. Prabhupada says there is a Gautami Tantra. Prabhupada says there is 11th chapter, there are Arjuna's prayers, Gautami Tantra's verses are prayers, and the Bhagavatam there are hundreds of prayers. And like that, there are many prayers. So we see that Gajendra, he offered prayers. And that's how 8.2 is Gajendra gets into trouble, the elephant Gajendra's crisis. And 8.3 is Gajendra's prayers of surrender. And 8.3 is Gajendra is liberated. So actually, offering prayers is glorious. And if we can memorize verses, it's very, very helpful. Sometimes you may think, oh, memorizing verses requires a burden on the head. But actually, if once we memorize verses, they will become like ready-made weapons for us. Ready-made tools by which we can think of Krishna. When we are told to think of Krishna, how do you think of Krishna? You just try to visualize some form. That's good if we can do that. But if we memorize verses, then we can recite those verses any place, and then we can absorb ourselves in Krishna. So we may think initially verses memorizing is a burden for the head, but verses won't burden the head. Memorize verses. Eventually they will unburden the heart. Our heart is burdened by anxiety, worry, anarthas, and then we can absorb ourselves in memorizing and in reciting memorized verses. Then that will unburden the heart. And like that, there are other elements. It's just straightforward: drinking charanamrut, smelling the incense, then touching the deity. Prabhupada talks about how there is this agitation in India about how one should not, how people, lower caste people, wanted to enter the temples. So the idea of, again, in restricting entry into the temple is to make sure that people who are qualified enter. So people who are qualified, they worship the deity. That means it's just a way of honoring the deity. And if one is a bhakta, if one gets initiated, one can easily enter the temple and one can make spiritual advancement thereof. So now sometimes in ISKCON, ISKCON devotees are not allowed to enter the Jagannath temple. So the idea is, the original regulation might be is valid. That, you know, people who are offensive, if they enter the temple, they will think this is a stone and they will commit further offenses. If people are not pure, they may commit more offenses. So it is a matter, way of protecting them from committing offenses. And they may blaspheme the deity, they may disturb the faith of others also. So to have proper honor for the deity, to protect those people from committing offenses and from to prevent disturbing the faith of others, there is a rule of restricting some people from visiting the temples. But with respect to, Srila Prabhupada would say, with respect to ISKCON devotees, they are following four regulative principles, they have given their life to Krishna. So why should they be restricted? So that sort of restriction should not be there. So that is with respect to worshipping the deity, seeing the deity, and then observing and aarti and other celebrations of the Lord. So in this way, these are all various items of devotional service by which we can make steady spiritual advancement. We'll continue in our next class. Thank you. Hare Krishna.